potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new movies Eternals, Finch, The Beta Test, Love Hard, and Paranormal Activity Next of Kin. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring a look back at Stargate SG-1. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The news I want to hit this week is all about the box office, because coming up we're going to be having big holiday releases, obviously like something like the Marvel movie Eternals this week, but leaning forward into the big holiday movies like Encanto, which is the animated film from Disney, and we've got a bunch of award films coming up, and they're really trying to ramp up the end of the year, because we've had a relatively successful fall, but not an entirely successful fall. Dune stayed at top, but it hemorrhaged about 62% down to 15 million, which actually isn't bad. I mean, off of expectations, people are expecting it to drop even heavier. So this isn't really a disaster, but of course everyone's blaming HBO Max. And I think that certainly the ability to watch it at home has suppressed the box office a bit, but you can't ignore the amount of money that Warner Brothers is getting from the HBO Max subscriptions, which I think last time I did the numbers, it's somewhere like $750 million a month that they're billing for that. So if that's keeping some people around to keep HBO Max, then yeah, they're still profiting from this, and Dune is still playing into the profits of the studio and the corporation. But we're also not recognizing the fact that Dune was going to be front-loaded. It's not a series yet. I mean, it will be once it does Dune Part 2, but it's not like something like a Marvel movie tends to deflate quite a bit in its second weekends. The big franchises tend to be front-loaded because there's an immediacy factor of people wanting to watch the next installment. What's happening with Dune is there was big excitement in especially critical communities and a lot of fandom communities because people were waiting to see this, and a lot of the demand got burned off in its first weekend. So anticipation can also lead to a front-loaded release. Also, you got to realize something like 20% of the tickets sold for this were at a higher price IMAX or large format screen presentation. And that meant it maybe made more money, but it didn't have as many butts in the seats as previous films. You see that oftentimes brought up with kids movies and the fact that if a kids movie does pretty well, people will point out it actually had more people seeing it because the kids' prices are cheaper. So you can get more people in under $20 million than you can if they were all adults. So that's something to also note, because Dune is playing very well in the large format screens. Once it loses those, that's going to drop quite a bit. Now, Halloween Kills came in second, making almost $9 million, which is actually pretty good. It's less than a 40% drop from second weekend to third weekend, and it certainly didn't hurt the fact that Halloween was on Sunday, and it actually got a bigger Sunday than was originally reported, and that's because a lot of people want to see a Halloween movie on Halloween, and a bunch of people went and saw it in the theaters. So that works, and considering that Halloween Kills is also available on Peacock right now for at least the paying service, $4.99 a month, it's still available, which is a good sign for the box office, at least for a movie like Halloween. Now, comparably, No Time to Die is fizzling a bit, with a domestic box office take of last weekend with $7.7 million. That's coming out of the weekend pretty low, like $133 million, which is kind of low for modern Bond. I mean, that's on par with some of the stuff that happened pre-Skyfall, but post-Skyfall, they're expecting bigger numbers for this. And it crossed $600 million worldwide, which is not a whole lot of movies have done that this year. But recent Bond movies have been making much more than that. But the reality is, even with a lower box office take in China, because that's where there were some theater closures recently, Bond makes most of its money overseas, excluding the massive domestic haul that Skyfall had. Now, that leads us to the other two new releases. Outside of that, there was, by the way, before I get on to those other releases, there was a big surprise release. The My Hero Academia World Heroes Mission came in fourth, which nobody ever expected that. That comes from Funimation. This is sort of like when Demon Slayer did extremely, extremely well in the box office and no one at all predicted it. You're seeing something similar happen here. Of course, you've got the fan base driving that. But also, Antlers and Last Night in Soho both made just over $4 million, which is kind of terrible for both, considering their Antlers is bona fide horror and Last Night in Soho is horror adjacent. You would expect horror movies to do better on Halloween weekend, but they didn't. And with the success that Edgar Wright saw with Baby Driver, this is a huge step down for him. So Edgar Wright is not the money-making director a lot of people think because he has such a fan base. So ultimately, what we're seeing here is some movies like Venom and Shang-Chi can draw a lot of people into the theaters, but other films still do quite low. And this is not just the pandemic. I've pointed this out. There is an impact that the coronavirus is having on some people. I know personally several people who are not eager to return to theaters, even though they can go to an empty theater pretty much any time during the business day. But there's a lot of people who've just readjusted their lives. There's new movies and new TV shows, plus options for binge watching that have kept people home. And only the real social animals and the people in the younger generations are heading out to the theaters. So the movies that cater to them are the ones that bringing people to the theaters. And that actually doubles down on the talking and the movement and the shuffling and that social aspect of movie going that keeps the older and the more subdued generation away or the audience away from that. And that makes the distraction issues even more, which is keeping the people home from theaters. It's this weird polarizing effect that I think we're seeing. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Morbius, which opens on January 28th.
Dr. Michael Morbius, you've been missing for 2 months. Then you were found on a container ship that washed up off of Long Island.
What did you do to yourself, Doctor?
I wish I knew.
I went from dying to being more alive than ever.
It worked.
Not exactly.
I have increased strength and speed and some form of bat radar.
Wants to hunt
and consume blood.
This is another offshoot of the Marvel Universe. It's not Marvel Cinematic Universe. It fits in the Spider-Man-ish universe, in the Venom-verse, we'll say, because this has the character of Morbius, which comes from the comics. And in the trailer, he actually name-checks Venom at the very end to remind people that he's in that universe. But this is about a Dr. Vampire, basically. Dr. Acula, so to speak. And he is played by Jared Leto. So, I mean, the movie looks like it might be pretty good until you get Jared Leto acting pretentious. And that may end up being the downfall of the film. The next one I want to talk about is Moonfall, which opens in theaters on February 4th.
They found something on that day that they kept hidden for 50 years. And now, it's too late to stop.
In breaking news, the governor has just ordered the mass evacuation of the entire West Coast.
Moving to higher ground is the only possible chance of surviving.
This is Roland Emmerich returning to the movies he does best, which are the giant epic adventure films, the disaster movies that really redefined the 90s and early 2000s, you know, stuff like Independence Day and The Day After Tomorrow and 2012, which just people like to watch the spectacle of Roland Emmerich. When he's making movies about Shakespeare and Mel Gibson and the Revolutionary War, I don't think people are as interested in that. They want to see the spectacle. And this one certainly looks like it's going to be as big and as dumb as 2012 or Independence Day Resurgence. But, you know, I'm kind of into it. I like Roland Emmerich for the spectacle, and I'll be excited to see this movie, even though it looks like it's terrible, but it'll be fun. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Paranormal Activity, Next of Kin, and the beta test. Because we can! Uh-oh. 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 Uh-oh.
Thank you.
back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about Paranormal Activity, Next of Kin. A young woman is making a documentary about her birth mother's family, only to discover a terrifying secret.
We are shooting a documentary because I am about to meet my first biological relative.
She's Amish.
I'm not. I am not Amish.
We are humbled and grateful to have our sister Margot return to us.
Whoa. Why would they build a church all the way back here?
What is that?
The demon Asmodeus was trapped inside a chosen woman of God.
This has happened before.
This is the latest in the Paranormal Activity series, obviously. It's available on Paramount Plus. But it came out 2 days before Halloween. But I was so full last week, I couldn't talk about it then. But I figured, hey, let's talk about it. You know, I can always still talk about a horror movie. And Halloween was only a couple days ago, for crying out loud. But anyone who knows me and has listened to me throughout the years, you know I hate found footage. I hate that it became a genre. If you have a framework, and it happens to be a found footage framework, something like the Blair Witch Project or something like The Sacrament, I am all for found footage. And if you remember a couple weeks ago when I talked about VHS 94, I think was the name of the latest VHS movie, that's a found footage type of cinematic experience. And I don't mind that because I think that it fits in the genre. What bothered me was when they just took a regular story and said, let's just make it a found footage movie. And it just became a gimmick of presentation. And there are just too many obstacles and problems with it. This one works. Because it's ostensibly them doing a documentary. So there's a reason there's camera there, and a reason there's the cameras aren't turned off. I think it justifies itself better than some of the later Paranormal Activity movies. I like the first one and the third one. Then they really started to circle the drain after that. But this one's interesting because it takes a step back. It's not just continuing the Paranormal Activity story. Although I think after watching it, I'm not 100% sure, but I think they have some weird connective tissue to it, but they really don't fixate too much on it. But it's a really creepy story about this girl who was adopted and she's going to find her biological family. And they're these Amish people who live somewhere in Pennsylvania. And they end up on the farm and they take them in. But of course, like, you know, you hear in the trailer and you heard me say in the blurb, it's something darker's going on. There's something behind the scenes and there's something they're not telling her. And it's not unpredictable. Let me tell you, you can kind of see where things are going. And you know that bad things are going to happen to these kids going and doing this documentary from the moment the movie starts. Why? Because it's a horror movie. That's how you know that this bad stuff's going to happen. It really has a not a level of guessing. And I mean, in terms of, you know, bad things are going to happen, but trying to figure out exactly how it all ties together and how this is all going to end and what's going to be the final results to all the different people involved, in particular, the kids that are in there doing the documentary. But this is an interesting little movie. I really kind of enjoyed it. I thought it was creepy and I thought it was effective. And I did enjoy it. I'm going to have to say, it's probably one of the better Paranormal Activity movies they've made in quite a few years. And it's a shame it just got relegated to streaming, but that's okay. I think the Paramount's trying to beef up their streaming content and be able to go toe to toe with people like Disney and now Universal with Peacock and of course HBO Max. So I'm going to have to say Paranormal Activity Next of Kin kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the beta test. After getting an invite to a no-strings-attached night of infidelity, a Hollywood agent spirals into paranoia as he tries to track down the mystery behind the invitation.
A couple of weeks ago, I got a letter in the mail inviting me to a no-strings-attached sexual encounter in a hotel room. I was stupid. I went.
What? Hold on. Wait, this is really happening? You really did this? In this climate?
Maybe it's your wife. Maybe it's my wife. People are so terrified of stepping out of line. Consequences won't go away anymore.
This is written and directed and stars Jim Cummings, who's he's a younger actor. And I'm not talking about the guy who does the voice for Winnie the Pooh. He was in Halloween Killed. He had a small part in Halloween Kills. And he's kind of that independent director that will also star in his stuff. He's a good-looking guy, so he can sort of make it in Hollywood as a guy in feature films. He doesn't have that schlubby look, you know, it's like somebody like me would. But this has a really dark, sardonic, and cynical look at Los Angeles and the entertainment industry in general. And when I say the entertainment industry, I'm not talking about the directors and the actors and the producers and the people who make the movies, although there's a lot of sleaziness going on in there too. And look, this is the industry I report on, and I am fully aware there's a lot of sleaziness going on. But there's also like a secondary industry to it. You've got the agents and the managers and the publicists and people. And I know some of them, and some of them are very, very good, and some of them are just trying to do their job. But it's their job to build up these sometimes smarmy people. And it's all about image. And as much as the actor's job is all about image, it's really the management and the agents and the publicist's job to make it all about image. And so this is shining a light on them, because the character in here, he works for a new agency that's trying to poach a lot of talent from other agencies. Even to the point that they take digs at like the WGA as a guild. But at the same time, when they roll the credits, everybody who has a WGA membership puts the initials WGA after their name. So they're owning up to the fact that they're part of that machine in the metaverse of this movie, but still kind of poking fun at the way the industry works. And it also, it's about this smarmy little sort of almost a sex opportunity, but possible blackmail afterwards type thing that is rampant out there. You know, Hollywood and Los Angeles itself, but really Hollywood and that industry is very focused on image and look, and not just your appearance, but who you are. And with social media, it goes even deeper, and there's a thinner veil between that and your real life, and you got to work to protect anything that's normal. You know, you don't want people, you know, if you're an influencer, you don't want to tell when you're going to the bathroom, that kind of thing. And Jim Cummings plays this good looking and a seemingly great guy. I described it to a friend as he plays it like Ryan Reynolds without the charm. I mean, Ryan Reynolds does these movies and he'll say some of the meanest things, but he's very likable when he says it. This guy's not. It's like he stripped all that charm out of Ryan Reynolds and he threw him on the screen and you get this character that he's playing. I'm not saying that the actor's like that, but that's how he portrays the character. But it also has this sardonic look at the way I think some people do look at the industry of saying, oh, it's too bad we're in the post-Me Too movement. We can't grab somebody's butt at a party. You know, everybody's being careful on what they say. Well, it's okay to be careful on what you say, because the whole point is this movie is showing how the people in power and the people who wielded that power and abused that power are now terrified to do that. And that's a good thing. You don't want predators to be okay and happy with doing predatory things. And what this is it's showing the predators are the ones that are really getting paranoid and freaking out, which at times you end up seeing that in real life. Whenever you push somebody who's privileged and never been caught and never been challenged on stuff, and you push them on it and you accuse them of, they get very, very defensive. And that's what you see in this movie. So this has a great subtext. There's parts of the movie that they don't quite explain things terribly well, and they kind of go on a little bit too long at times. So it does have its stumbling blocks, but I gotta say, the beta test, I think, is a really deft deconstruction of LA life and that industry that supports the entertainment industry. So especially if you're in LA or in Hollywood or in the movie business, check this one out. But it's not exactly an uplifting film. But I'm gonna say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm gonna be talking about Eternals and Love Hard. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about the one that's probably going to be a big one this weekend, and that is Eternals. In this next stage of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, a group of 10 immortal beings have been charged with protecting humanity from dangerous alien monsters, and they soon learn a new purpose.
We have watched. Unguided. We have helped them progress and seen them accomplish wonders. Throughout the years, we have never interfered until now.
This is the next step into Marvel Phase 4. And it's different. It's actually quite different than your standard Marvel movie. I mean, it has the elements you'd expect. Yes, it has the big spectacle and the big battles and the fights. And yeah, it does have a certain degree of humor to it, which all the Marvel movies do. This one maybe puts it in a little bit differently. A lot of the humor comes from Kumail Nanjiani or from some sort of tongue-in-cheek scenes. But overall, this is a much more serious toned film. And I think a lot of that has to do with the director. This is directed by Chloe Zhao, who is best known for having won the Oscar for directing Nomadland last year. And when you watch this movie, you can absolutely believe that this is a Marvel movie made by the director of Nomadland. And don't get me wrong, Nomadland was a fantastic movie. It was very well done and poignant and a powerful movie. But it was a very sincere and deliberately paced and minimalistic movie about a specific character and her development. And this movie has 10 new, and not actually more than 10, because you got some ancillary characters, but you got 10 new heroes in this movie as these immortals. And some of them are played by recognizable names like Salma Hayek or Angelina Jolie. And 10 is a lot. And when you look at this movie, it basically sets them up as these immortals that have been watching over the protecting humanity from, specifically from these creatures. They're not allowed to interfere anywhere else, but specifically stop these creatures from killing them. Because of course they always have to have any sort of post Infinity War story. You got to have the thing of somebody going, "Hey, where were you guys during the Thanos thing?" And always the answer tends to be, when they did the Avengers movies, not only did they have like four movies leading up to them, five if you count the two Iron Man movies, but you only had like six characters if you count Hawkeye and Black Widow. That's only six. And in this movie, a good chunk of this movie is about them reassembling them because they've kind of wiped out these evil aliens and they're coming back. They, I guess, got thawed out in the ice. And so they're coming back and attacking humanity. So they have to reassemble. And so the whole movie, a good chunk of the movie is them assembling everybody. But they only had to assemble six Avengers in the Avengers. And those were very easily digestible superheroes. You know, this billionaire who has a super suit. You know, the Norse god of thunder is actually an alien. Or this guy who turns into a giant green rage monster when he's angry. Or this guy who's just a super soldier. That's easy enough to understand. Well, where are these people? Well, they're ancient beings from this other planet that have been imbued with this power. And they deal with these celestials and this and that and da-da-da. I mean, there's a lot to wrap your brain around about exactly even who these characters are. And we don't have a backstory on anybody. So there's 10 different characters that are all getting developed in this movie. And that's a lot to bite off, even for somebody like Chloe Zhao, who is known for character development. So that's one of the big stumbling blocks. I don't necessarily say it's bad for the movie. I think this is going to play better after we see several other movies and we see how these characters fit in and get to know, and we find out which characters we get to know more and which other ones are left in the dust. But these are also characters no one's ever heard of, aside from a very small fan base within even the Marvel universe. So this is a ballsy move for Marvel to put these characters and give them their own story. I mean, it still works for what it is. It's clunky, and I think that's the biggest part. And also some of the acting, like Gemma Chan's the main character, but really she's not the best actress in the bunch. I mean, Angelina Jolie's the best actress, and her character's a little sidelined, has a couple moments, but otherwise doesn't get the spotlight, and really she has better acting chops and could have done this character better, and then this other guy could have been played by somebody else. I question some of the casting. I will say it's a bit of a triumph for Zhao to put this thing together and not make it be an absolute mess. I mean, it's still an enjoyable film. It does run a bit long. It's 157 minutes, which is over 2.5 hours. And I'm not saying it should have been edited and shortened. I think if there were five Eternals, it would have been easier to digest. But I think they're trying to be true to the story. So I enjoyed it. I didn't love it. It's not my favorite Marvel movie. And I know it's getting kind of trashed by some people, but to me, I'm saying give it time. I mean, this isn't as, it's very cosmic and it's out there and it's bizarre, but it's not out there and bizarre like Guardians of the Galaxy, because you can still say, "Hey, look, a talking raccoon." But this one is just still a bunch of these Eternals that shoot laser beams out of something. So I think it's going to be better when we see how these characters tie in with each other. I mean, this is even more out there than something like Shang-Chi, which was still just a martial arts movie. It was a brand new character, but it still, you know, was a guy from Earth who was very relatable. This one's a lot less relatable, but I think they do a good job. It's one of those I kind of want to see a couple more times just to kind of get my bearings on it. So I'm still going to say Eternals kind of rocks, but it's an experiment and you're going to have to go with it.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Love Hard. Get ready, people. This is my first Christmas movie I'm reviewing this year. A cynical writer from Los Angeles connects online with the perfect match, then travels across the country to spend Christmas with him, only to discover things aren't always what they seem.
Oh my God, he is so cute!
I'm gonna fly to New York for the holidays, I'm gonna surprise Josh, and I'm gonna get my happy ending.
Josh, someone's here to see you!
As of this moment, right now, my disaster dating days are over.
Natalie?
Look, I can explain.
I don't understand. We talked. I made sure. The photo. It had my name on it.
I'm pretty good at Photoshop.
I watched this movie with my wife, and my wife is a huge fan of romantic comedies. It's her favorite genre. And, I mean, she's an easy mark for those sort of things. She absolutely loves that kind of stuff. And we watched it, and it's funny. I'm kind of, you know, making a couple jokes throughout and kind of getting a little bit cynical as I'm watching. And I'm like, I don't know about this. This is ridiculous or silly. It stars Nina Dobrev, who is best known for Vampire Diaries. I mean, she's older, obviously. Vampire Diaries, she was actually in her early 20s. Now she's in her early 30s. And she looks like she's getting a little older. And it also stars Jimmy Yang, who's best known for, I think he was in Silicon Valley. And it's basically a weird meet cute of a love story. And ultimately, it's playing off the story of Cyrano de Bergerac, which is when you don't put the right profile picture up and you hide who you are online, and then you end up having to meet the person, and things go a little over the top. But, you know, this is what I said to my wife. I go, when a movie like this comes along, it's always clunky at the beginning because you're trying to avoid cliches, and at times you're leaning into other cliches, and it gets really awkward, and it all depends on the chemistry between the two leads. And if you take too long to get the leads together, that's when the movie crumbles. And this movie, that first 20 minutes or so before they get together and can actually start interacting and have a fight and get to know each other, that's when the movie kind of comes alive. The chemistry between Yang and Dobrev is actually quite good. And once they get together, yeah, there's some stupid stuff that goes on, but actually it's kind of a sweet story and I fell for it. But you gotta wait till they get to meet each other. All that lead up and stuff is really corny and kind of stupid at times, and it conflicts with its own story at times. But ultimately, this is a cute little movie. It works for like just a happy little holiday movie. It's from Netflix. It's on Netflix right now. And you know, Netflix is going to be dropping a whole bunch of these Christmas love stories that are going to be coming. Not as many as like the Hallmark Channel, but they're very popular right now. And this one's kind of cute. And I think this one can bridge the gap between something that a 20-something can watch and a woman who's not a 20-something anymore, like my wife, could watch. So, yeah, I'm going to have to say Love Hard was kind of cute. So I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Finch and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Stargate SG-1. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up our movie reviews with Finch, which is on Apple TV Plus. And this is what I've been saying for months. Watch out for these streaming services, because we have two big movies in the theaters that are opening brand new. And then we have a bunch of other stuff that's on streaming services that is indistinguishable from movies that are in the theaters. I mean, it used to be, if there was a movie that was made direct for cable, I'm not talking about something on TBS or TNT. I'm talking about stuff that was made by HBO back in the 90s, or by Showtime or Cinemax, all those softcore porn movies that they played on Skinemax back in the day. You could tell they're much more low rent. But now we're at a point where you put a lot of these movies up against each other, and if you didn't know where they were presented, they don't necessarily look like TV shows. They don't look like web series. They look like bona fide movies. I dare anybody to look at a movie like that, what I'm going to talk about, Finch or Paranormal Activity, Next of Kin, or Love Heart, and look at it and say, that absolutely looks like something that would just be on cable and no one had ever put that in theaters. No, you're getting the same level of quality for better or for worse. And this next one is on Apple TV Plus exclusively. Tom Hanks stars as a man during the apocalypse who builds a robot to take care of his dog when he dies, and they all head out on a journey of discovery together.
Now, if you can speak, tell me something about you.
Robots must protect dog.
Hey, what's all the fuss?
I learned to talk dog. I don't think it likes me.
Do you think we'll make it?
Not without my team. What we do together.
I believe in you, Finch.
This is a weird mix of dangerous apocalyptic movie and sweet, tender Tom Hanks humanity story. Somebody pointed out to me that he has this history of doing movies with either inanimate objects or things that don't speak English. You know, last year he had News of the World, where most of his time was spent on screen with this young girl who didn't even speak English. And then, of course, the most famous one being Castaway, where he talked to a volleyball for most of the movie. And this one, he gets his own robot. And you know what? I gotta say, there is a real charm to this. Now, it does get a little bit corny. It breaks its own programming, so to speak, by overdoing it at times. But the charm that Tom Hanks brings and the humanity that Tom Hanks brings is what makes this movie works. But also, kudos goes to Caleb Landry Jones, who plays the voice of the robot. Now, most people don't know who he is. He was in 3 Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri, and he was probably more noticeably the brother in Get Out. He was Allison Williams' brother. And he usually plays sort of like these redneck idiots, but he plays this childlike wonderment robot. And he does a great job to the point that I didn't know who played his voice. And I was trying to think, throwing some really great actors in my head going, is it this person? At first, at one point, I thought it was Mark Rylance. Because, of course, Tom Hanks and Mark Rylance had worked before together. Look, this is a charming movie. At times corny, because it's about this guy who's kind of trying in some ways to teach this robot to be human, but also more or less to make intelligent decisions. Because the ozone layer, whatever had happened, the ozone layer is depleted, and If a person goes out in the sun, there's a high radiation level and they can get burned in seconds. And already Tom Hanks's character is dying of radiation poisoning and he wants his dog to live afterwards. And normally we outlive our dogs, but he knows he won't. And so there's this weird trio of characters going around learning what it's like to be human. And it absolutely works. It's the essence of what science fiction has always been. Science fiction has always been something that holds a mirror up to ourselves, for better or for worse, and we see what we are. And this one shows the humanity and the good stuff, the caring and the nurturing and the friendliness and a lot of the contradictions and the enigmas of being human. But it also shows how dangerous humanity can be, because the whole point is, in the apocalypse, you do not want to go out and just meet a bunch of new people, because there are some terrifying people that would end up out there. In a lawless society, there would be some really horrifying people, and we've seen plenty of movies about that. And I like the fact that they don't, I mean, obviously that's a threat out there, and it comes up at times, but it's not them tortured for an hour and a half or something like that. It's them having this journey of discovery. And I think it absolutely works, and it's charming as all get out. Apple TV Plus has a lot of good stuff up there, way beyond just Ted Lasso. If you haven't sprung for Apple TV Plus, it's not that expensive. It's worth checking out. I really enjoyed this movie, so I'm going to have to say it totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Now, this week's spotlight is on something that's not new that's out in stores or anything, but it's something that's going to be disappearing off of streaming pretty soon. Stargate SG-1 was a TV series that was spun off from the Stargate movie that Roland Emmerich and Dean Devlin did back in the mid-90s. And it started out on Showtime, and it ended up having like 5 years on Showtime, and then it moved to the Sci-Fi Channel, where it had another 5 years. And then they did a couple spinoff shows, most famously Stargate Atlantis, which ran for 5 years, and then the ill-fated Stargate Universe, which ran for two. By the end of November, it'll be gone from streaming. So if you have not watched it or you're trying to finish it up, now is the time to do it. And I think part of what's happening is there's a lot of talk about Amazon trying to buy MGM, which gives them their entire library, which is, I think, the reason they want it. They don't just want the James Bond series, because that's really the only viable theatrical franchise right now that MGM has a stake in. They want the massive library of content that they can just put up for free, not for free, but without paying royalties, the way Disney has all of their Marvel and Star Wars stuff up there. And Stargate SG-1 is owned by, or its distribution is owned by MGM. And so I think that it's part of the power play, and that's why it's not getting renewed on these services. Anyways, a secret branch of the Air Force uses an ancient artifact to travel to hundreds of worlds around the galaxy in search of ways to defend themselves from an alien threat.
Permission to take a team through the Stargate, sir.
A deadly assault. An insurmountable enemy. Earth's future is in the hands of one man.
Consider yourself a call to active duty, Colonel.
The War of the Worlds is about to begin.
The aliens could have come from anywhere.
Richard Dean Anderson leads the excitement on Stargate SG-1.
What's interesting with this show is my wife and I have watched it. This is the second time we've gone through and watched it. I remember when it was first being released on DVD, I got some of those to review. And I really liked Stargate Atlantis, but I went back and started watching Stargate SG-1. And we watched all the series on DVD. And a year or so ago, we started rewatching it on streaming. And whenever we had an extra hour, when we were watching TV or at night, or we wanted to have dinner in front of the TV or whatever, we'd watch an episode. And it took us a while, obviously, to get through it. And now we're like having to race through and finish it up before the end of the month, because it's going to disappear off the service. Richard Dean Anderson plays Jack O'Neill, which is the Kurt Russell character from the movie. And he's really good. I mean, he's the veteran army soldier, and he sort of has that template to him. And then Michael Shanks plays Daniel Jackson, who was played by James Spader in the original movie. And he's the archaeologist. And you've got Samantha Carter, who's a new character, played by Amanda Tapping. And she's a military person, but also a brilliant scientist. And then you have Teal'c, who's this big, strong guard for the bad guys who switch sides. The first five seasons are from Showtime, and Showtime did not do a very good job putting these together. The stories are really kind of rough and choppy, and really those first two, well, certainly the first two seasons, but maybe the first three seasons are pretty dreadful. And when you get to four or five, they kind of hit a stride, but they still get very corny and very stilted. And you know how I said these movies today, they don't feel like things that are being made for TV. This felt like it was made for TV, and it was made by Showtime. When it switched to the Sci-Fi Channel in season six, it gets much better. But they're still trapped in all of the mistakes that they made in those first five seasons, and kind of a clunky enemy. And you know, like the character of Samantha Carter, she's too much of a Mary Sue. She's a brilliant strategist. She's a brilliant military mind. She's a genius with astrophysics. She's a genius with that. She's smart with this. She's good with that. She's beautiful. She's talented. There is no flaws in this woman. And it's a boring character, whereas Richard Dean Anderson kind of becomes a bit of an idiot at times. And when they retooled that sort of dynamic for the spinoff series like Atlantis, they worked much better on that. But I'm going to have to say, I enjoyed revisiting Stargate SG-1. I still got a couple seasons to do, so there's some binge watching in my future. If you like military science fiction and you want something that's an alternative to Star Wars or Star Trek, this is absolutely worth checking out. You can get the DVDs, and it's still online at least for a couple weeks, so you can check it out either way. I'm still going to say it kind of rocks, because those first seasons were rough, but still, check it out.
It kind of rocks.
And that's it. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Belfast, Red Notice, and Clifford the Big Red Dog. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.